When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Knife Talk Podcast. This is where we talk knives. It's in the name, right? We answer your questions. We try to help as best as we can. We also sometimes like to be not very helpful, or give each other a hard time, or other people as well. I'm Mareko. I'm like cracking up on my own.
the age is getting to you. 50 has changed you.
It's already hitting me. I'm Mareko Malmasi, Malmasi Fire Arts. I'm 1 year older now, and I don't know if it makes me wiser or not. But I'm here with Craig Lockwood, the captain of the ship, and Mr. Jeff Fader, our senior advisor. How'd you guys been? How's the last week been?
Well, we were good. How was your birthday been? Let's start with that.
It was a busy, busy weekend. What the hell? Yeah, there's just a lot going on between me doing the knife sharpening market and having family in town and going up to the island for family vacation time / birthday stuff and other extended family birthday party shit and hanging out with friends and still trying to get shit done in the shop. It was very busy. But good. Yeah.
Good. You enjoyed yourself. Very nice. Nice. We missed you last week. We really did.
Really?
Yeah.
We did.
This is a fucking three-person podcast.
I promise you.
I mean, it's a three-person podcast. I mean, you know, you're needed.
The tripod.
Yeah.
It's a tripod.
Yeah, well, we needed somebody to keep Jeff in line last week. He got a bit out of hand, actually. Bit out of hand. And we've got a new slogan, apparently.
Well, I didn't get that out of hand, but I mean, you know, person needed help. But sometimes on a podcast, you have to say things that aren't, you know, standard. You have to be a little nuanced. So I got a little nuance to this fucking guy. And the listeners enjoyed the nuance, and we can talk about that in listener feedback. So,
yeah. Okay. That's good. Jeff, how was your week? I understand you went to a restaurant opening last night.
I did go to a friend of mine was opening a restaurant, and they wanted a small table of people to try the food. So I got to try the food last night, which was fun. And that was every so often this guy opens restaurants up and he calls me up, and that's always a pleasure. And then I get to bring some food home for the family, and they always like that. So we had a good time with that and a couple.
Whoa! How does that work? Go to a restaurant and you end up bringing food home.
No, because we don't eat everything. I mean, the kitchen, they were testing recipes.
Okay,
so they're bringing out family style plates of food for all of us to try and talk about and see what we thought. And there was all this extra.
Interesting. So it was like almost kind of like a critique group.
Well, I mean, that's what these guys do. I mean, you don't just. You know, it's nice to have a little feedback on the food. So
I have a couple soft openings were.
Well, I mean, this is not that. Soft openings are usually for service. Soft openings are to get the service down and the food down and your servers and the work out the point of sale systems and all that. This was like
I got you.
The chef wanted to try some food out, and the owner was like grabbed a couple people, and it's fun when we do that. And it's a group of guys that I know, and you know, some chefs were there, and we had a good time. So,
is it your peeps over at Fin and Brew?
It was out of the Fin and Brew kitchen, but it was not the chef, not Mike Anastasio cooking. It was a new chef who was kind of trying to get the kitchen open. It was fine. And then
occasionally, when I'm eating food, I'll send Jeff a picture for some critique too. which we did yesterday, I think, just before you went to the restaurant.
You ate quite a fucking gut bomb, dude. I don't know how you're standing up. I can't believe you don't have gout, to be honest with you.
Oh, go ahead. That's the goal. The gout is the goal, I'm telling you. So, just
was it a salt lick? People, what was it?
I mean, might as well.
It was a burger, but it was quite a special burger. So it was a burger in a croissant.
Okay.
With the runniest cheese coming out of it and like Serrano ham fried on top.
Wow.
It was a very, very good burger. And I thought, I think Jeff needs to see this because he's got this thing about this mixture of food and even cheese with beef. I know.
No, I like a cheeseburger. Cheeseburgers are great.
Okay. But this was special. This was smart. And just how you want a burger to be, you know, dirty and greasy. That's, you know, that's,
you don't want to feel like you want to go visit the morgue afterwards. I mean, You want to feel like that was great. Let's go for a walk. You don't want to feel like, you know, call the ambulance.
So anyway, so I passed on your critique to the chef, and I'm now banned. So I'll be going there.
Right. Well, as you should be. I think my critique was, Jesus Christ, what's the matter with you?
I mean, that's not enough.
That's what Mama Cass ate before she had a heart attack.
That's what I wrote. Yeah. I said that's what Mama Cass ate before she died. That's a whole one, but it was a good week. I went to visit some more colleges with my kid, and that was a lot of fun. I do have a story that we can save for the after show, but in terms of the shop, I got a new fucking thing. I am all in on the tile saw. I got a wet saw.
Told you so.
August was a fucking good month, so I got a couple things, and I saw that they had this wet tile saw. And it had a moving sled, so it's not only are you pushing it, but you have like a little sled to help push along. Oh, and I use it for the G10. One. I heard, I think I heard from it from Aaron Goff. And if Aaron Goff says something, I mean, you listen. He ain't one of them cuckoos, you know. He's given the real dope. He didn't give any of that bullshit. So I got one and I filled it with water. I put it together, and I was kind of stupefied. To be honest with you, there was no dust whatsoever. There was no odor of G10. It cut great, but what was interesting is the type of tile saws, the saw blade itself isn't like a toothed saw. So it has like diamond or whatever the hell it has on it. But there's abrasive on the first quarter of an inch along the sides. So it kind of even polishes the sides. So you get, like, if you're cutting G10 with a regular table saw, the teeth wear. And if the teeth wear, you might not be getting the most cleanest edge. And for me, because I'm doing these kind of like stack ups that are, you know, I want crispy edges, the tile saw really made a very, very clean square edge, which was great. And there was a little water, but it wasn't crazy. And there was no dust, zero fumes, no burnt. There wasn't burnt edges. There was no, like I said, no dust, no fumes. It was awesome. And now so that. The wet tile saw is now the way we're going to be cutting G10, which I'm psyched. Because also, when I usually cut G10 on a table saw, I got to roll up the doors and I got to put the respirator on, and I got to put fans on so it's blowing out everything out of the, keeping everything out of the shop. So now I can do it in the winter time. I can, you know, nice. I can keep the clean. Doors closed, and it's just everything about it is so much better. And I got some messages from people saying that the blades should last a lot longer because I guess ceramics are much more wear resistant on a blade than G10. So it should last for a long time.
I've never changed the blade on mine. Hmm. And I must have done thousands of cuts. So yeah.
I mean, it's not exactly. I mean, if you compare a sharp table saw blade to a wet saw blade in terms of how fast it cuts, I'm sure that the sharp table saw blade goes faster. But like, I couldn't get over how good of a cut it was and how much less I'm going to have to breathe. So
yeah, I wonder if you could set up like some sort of counterweighted kind of, because you got the sled, so some sort of counterweights that kind of just gently pull the sled into the blade while you go do other shit.
I don't think I want to. I mean,
you want to do that. So you guys, all right. So you guys are doing your water sports stuff. What else? What else you been up to?
I mean, water sports stuff is, that's a lot of connotations too. I mean, if we're going down that road.
I know.
I mean, that was my tip. I mean, I was my tip of the day here. The tile saw is fucking awesome for G10, and then I finished off some Tiger Barb paring knives, and those are out the door. And I got a big week coming up, and then I'm going to the Center for Metal Arts next week for the friction folder class. So I'm excited about that. And then it's busy. Everything's busy. It's good.
Nice. Okay.
How are you, Craig?
I'm very good. I'm very relaxed. Last week I had a bit of a head on me because I was a little bit hungover. Right. Because we did a Saturday afternoon show, and the Friday there was a bit of drinking going on. So I've got clean head today. I'm all good. Very relaxed, actually. We had a night out with my wife last night for the first time since the baby has been born. So, yeah, it was nice. We just went somewhere local for food, had a few drinks, went to the cinema, and it was just nice just to relax a bit, you know, and breathe easy. So it was good. It was really good. And today we had, you know, band rehearsal. So swimming with the kids this morning. So it's been a busy day, but lovely, relaxing. I said a couple of weeks ago, the last time I went to the UK, I had a meeting with a restaurant that I was hoping to work with. And that's all panned out. So that has started as well, which is nice. So it's been a really nice week. And it feels as if it's the end of the summer. The kids go back to school this week on Thursday.
Oh, wow.
My wife goes back to work the following Monday, which she's full of dread about. So it feels as if normality is happening again. And, yeah, all very positive. So I'm very happy.
That's good.
Very happy. Mm. Nice. It's all good.
How's the butter knife situation going?
The butter knife is good. I said an order has been put in for some laser cutting. It's good. I really like the design. Super, super simple and elegant. They're going to be pretty low cost because the way it's being made. It's going to be a sort of gentle introduction back to me selling knives again for the first time in a long time. So yeah, it's all good. Everything's positive and calm and how it should be.
We got a lot of nice best feedback. We got a lot of nice listener feedback about your butter knife too. So
really,
and then not to mention,
did we have suggested names?
No suggested names, but it was a lot of like talking about last week. We're talking about heat treatment versus not heat treatment. So that there's a lot of interesting feedback from listeners. There was also
let's ask Mareko on that. We'll go back to that in a sec. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Go on.
I was just going to say in terms of listener feedback too. I went to see the Yankee Mets game. And it was, without question, of all the baseball games I've ever seen in my entire life, it was the most exciting game I'd ever seen in my life. It was amazing. What I did get a lot of messages from, apparently there's this video going around from this guy in Yankee Stadium who took a hot dog, and he stuck a straw in it, made a hole, and stuck it in a cup of beer, used the glizzy as a straw. And everyone seemed to think that that's what I was going to do. And I have to say, it's a disgrace, but what's more of a disgrace is the fact that people think that these are all real videos. None of these videos, all these videos, there's a million of videos of people being, I'm putting air quotes up, caught in the act of doing something weird at a stadium. Yes. The funny part was is every time in between innings, they put people in the crowd up on the Jumbotron. And every single time, everyone tries to get their camera up so they can take a picture of them on the Jumbotron. No one ever makes it. And by the time they get their camera going, it's
a switch.
So all these videos of guys like, you know, using a hot dog as a straw, drinking beer, it's all fake. They're all fake videos. And everyone's sending me messages. This is Jeff over at the Yankee game and sucking on a glizzy. I did have a glizzy, by the way. And my kid and I both had hot dogs, and we both agreed that hot dogs are the fucking best, but they're the best when you only have one a year. So we partook. But there's a lot of good listener feedback in regards to all that.
Okay. Mareko, we've got a question for you.
Oh, boy.
So we talked I don't know if you listened to last week's show. Probably not. You've had a busy week.
I was busy.
So you didn't listen. Okay, we get you. So
I was busy laying next to the lake. Is what I was,
I was busy doing nothing.
Drinking too much.
I had my brother here, and I was showing him around the workshop, and I was showing him the next sort of model that I'm doing, and it's just a butter knife. And he was saying, well, how is that made? So I was explaining how it's made and showing the, you know, the even heat and all the rest of it. And he said, well, why do you heat treat knives? Why do you make them hot and all the rest of it? And I said, well, so you can cut an edge. It'll keep an edge. And he was like, well, if this is a butter knife, it's not going to have an edge, surely. And I said, no. He's like, well, why are you heat treating it? And I was like, oh, yeah, why am I? I said, I am, just because it's something that I always do. But the question came up, and it was just, oh, yeah, why am I? So that we're going to put the question to you. You're making a butter knife. Do you heat treat it? Stainless? Do you heat treat it?
100%.
Okay.
What's your reasoning? Okay.
Reasoning is for springiness. I mean, obviously, you'd have to do like a spring temper on it, but I would for toughness of the tool, because people are fucking stupid. Let's be honest. And how easy, like a soft piece of steel is to bend, is not what I would want in my butter knife. And actually, it kind of annoys me sometimes in butter knives, because especially when I'm spreading that butter on, and like I really want that spring return, you know. So. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like soft metal isn't necessarily the most ideal. Even though I think probably most butter knives are just stamped out and no heat treatment. Yeah. I don't know. This is a high performance tool, isn't it? I mean,
it's a high performance butter tool.
This is a step above.
So I mean, I'm heat treating.
Potentially
these,
could take an edge. I think that's a sales point right there.
I am heat treating them, but I was wondering also whether the heat treat would have anything to do with regard to the stain resistance as well. Are they in better shape for being heat treated, if you know what I mean?
Actually, potentially, if you do the heat treating too, like if you spend too much time at high temperatures, the carbides that are in the steel, or like the alloying elements, they can get tied up with the carbon, and when the carbon gets latched onto those, like the chromium especially, then that chromium isn't free to do its job as a stain-resisting element.
Oh, okay.
So potentially, if they're poorly heat-treated, that can work against you in that way.
Okay. And one more very important question.
But that would be like really dramatic, long period of time at high temperatures, so it'd be a horrible heat treat anyways.
Okay. Last, final question, which is very important. How much butter do you eat a week?
Oh, interesting question. I don't know.
A whole pack? Two packs? Three packs? Half a pack?
I have no... I don't do a butter tally, honestly.
Good answer. Don't ask me about my butter.
I mean, I'll say... So if I'm going to fry up a couple eggs, I'll put probably, you know, like whatever. Maybe a knob. Tablespoon? Yeah, not. No, I don't know about a knob. What's a knob? Is that a tablespoon of butter? Yeah. I'll probably throw that into the pan.
That's the size of Lockwood's dick, is what he's saying.
Yeah. Knob. Well, funny enough, a knob is it's a British term for a dick. Funny enough, yeah.
Okay. There you go. That
okay, we were just wondering because it was the question asked of me last week. Okay, no worries. Okay, let's do some listener feedback then.
Okay.
What have we got, Jeff?
Is this sponsored by anybody, or we're having such a good time?
Well, being as we're talking about heat treating, we might as well get this one sponsored.
Knife Talk is sponsored by EvenHeat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to
knifetalk.net/heat. That will take you to Sol Ceramics, who are a fantastic distributor of EvenHeats. They've got some built, ready to go. So go there, knifetalk.net/heat. You'll automatically get $75 off and free shipping in the US. So do yourself a favor. KnifeTalk.net/heat. That link is down in the description of the show, too.
Can I follow up our heat treat potential issues real quick with the stainless?
Yes.
So that is also potentially one of the problems with forging stainless, is because you have to keep it at high temperatures for a really long time to move that material around. What is it? Like powdered metallurgical steels are better for forging, but still... forging stainless in the first place is a huge pain in the ass, but with more conventionally, like, crucible-formed stainless that are then rolled out, like maybe an AEBL or something like that, or 154CM, those steels start as billets, and so going through the milling process to roll those giant billets down, they're crushing down those carbides to redisperse the carbon throughout the material so that when it gets down to a plate shape, somebody cuts out a knife and does a heat treat, everything's like kind of where it's supposed to be for a heat treat. But then you start forging on that material, that carbon at that high temperature for the amount of time that you're forging, that carbon's allowed to start moving around and starts tying up those chromium, especially the chromium, in the steel that could potentially lead to the steel being a lot less, I guess, functional as a stainless steel than it maybe would have if you had just done a simple stock removing the knife versus taking, you know, spending an hour and a half forging a stainless steel knife.
Yeah. You do want to forge
Damascus stainless steel, you might as well just buy Dharmasteel. Dharmasteel.se.
That's it.
They are Dharmasteel Lab on Instagram. Go take a look at some of the beautiful stuff people are making. Not just knife makers, jewelry makers, everything. If you're looking for some high-end Damascus, which is stainless, Dharmasteel is the place to go. And remember, kids, they also sell pants. use knife talk when you set up your account as a promo code, and you get 10% off your order. But either steel or pants. Okay, sorry, Jeff.
No, that was quite an interlude, by the way. In terms of Knife Talk listener feedback, there was a couple of butter knife feedback. Butter knife feedback. This one comes from Alpha Knife Works. He says, don't know if this will help Craig decide on the heat treatment or not, but Alex Pohl makes a butter knife out of either 304 or 316 stainless. That's not hardened. Can't remember which. 304 is also one of the cheaper steels. It might as well save a little bit more money on materials as well.
I've got one of those knives from Alex. Yes, they're very nice.
Ronald Knives says, hey guys, just started listening to the latest podcast and heard Craig talk about whether to harden his butter knives. One thing to consider is making that decision is the lattice structure of the steel and the alloying elements changing during the heat treat process. And with most knife making steels, that change has a significant impact on the rust resistance of the steel. I'm sure we all have had bars of stainless in our workspace with surface rust, which wouldn't have appeared on a finished stainless knife in the same environment. I sell heaps of steel at work, and, quote, why is my stainless steel stock getting rust on it, end quote, is a very frequent question I have from customers. So on board with what Mareka was saying for the most part. So
I will add, 304 and 316 have virtually no carbon in them, so heat treating them would be pointless.
Yeah,
completely pointless.
That's what he says. You don't heat treat them. I mean, what did I make out of 316? I don't remember. I think it was, might have been a bottle opener or something. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it was. And but it was after I forged it, it was hard. It was H-A-R-D. So I didn't really have to do anything that was, I don't know what the fuck I did with it. What did I do? Oh, I made a spoon. That's right. I made some spoons with it. They were not bending at all. I mean, after I forged them, they were not bending at all. So they were super hard. Without heat treating, obviously. So Rog McKibben says, he says a hot take. From now on, if you want to send a hot take, send him in the listener feedback, ladies and gentlemen, at a Knife Talk podcast on Instagram. His hot take is never sacrifice build quality. If a customer says it will only hang on the wall because people change their mind on a user, we had a question about if somebody wants a knife that goes directly on the wall and it's not to be used, it's just like an ornamental, do I heat treat it and do all this stuff to make it a real knife? He says, never sacrifice quality if a customer says it'll only hang on the wall because people change their mind on a user, and you never know who will end up with that knife with your mark on it. It only takes one falling apart to ruin your reputation as a custom maker. Make the best
point
and price accordingly. So it was Rob McKibben. And then, so you might as well answer the same question. Same question was, Mareko, somebody says to you, is like, I want you to make me a knife, but I'm never going to use it. I'm going to hang it on a wall. Are you giving it your go, giving it all the full blast, or are you kind of, you know, cutting corners on heat treatment and sharpening and
none of that? No, no corner cutting.
All right, no corner cutting. All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Kyle Heath says Jeff was on a new level this week's episode. I was dying with, quote, work a little harder and fuck a little better. Get that dick moving. I'll never stop learning. I'll never stop learning while listening to Knife Talk.
We did have somebody send in some logos with work harder, fuck better on as well.
You're going to have to listen to last week's episode, ladies and gentlemen. You don't want to know what we're talking about. Nav says, I can't tell you how upset I am that this week's episode is not called Move That Dick Around, get better at fucking, or work harder and fuck a little bit better. I was dying. And Brigham Kindell says, here's a new shirt idea. Work a little harder and fuck a little better. Ha, ha, ha. That made me laugh so hard. So, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, we had somebody asking for relationship advice, and that was Jeff's response.
So. I said it.
Listen back to last week.
It was good. It was a good little bit. And then well, a couple more. Anonymous hot take is this one. Anonymous, if you don't want to make something, don't. If you put a high price on it, they may say yes, and you'll have to do it, and you'll hate it the whole time. So he says don't make it if you don't want to make it.
Yeah. If you can afford not to make it, don't make it.
That's the key, if you can afford not to. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I tell you what you can't afford not to do is get your hands on some of this stuff.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
15% off. Don't be a fool. Okay, shall we do a question or two?
Got tough dilemmas too. Whatever you want.
Can I add to Jeff's spoon talk earlier?
Yeah, sure.
So, something, even though there's no carbon or virtually no carbon in those materials, they will still work harden. It's just like a paperclip. A paperclip doesn't really have a lot of carbon in it, but the materials that it's made out of, if you bend them and move them around enough, they'll work harden, and eventually that material will break. So that's definitely something to take into consideration for low carbon or no carbon materials, is that most of them can still work harden in some form or fashion. Even if it's just like drilling, honestly. I don't know if you guys have tried drilling through some stuff that all of a sudden just the drill stops and it doesn't cut anymore. And it's because that material has work hardened to a point that drill cannot cut it. So I just want to throw that in there.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Questions. The first one's anonymous. I don't quite know why it's anonymous. Do you make what you like making and sell it, or do you only take custom orders? And he says, could you say this is anonymous? I'm not quite sure why. But I mean, the dream for everybody is to make what they want and then sell it, isn't it? Unfortunately, it doesn't always work out that way. And if somebody comes along with a wad of money asking you to make something custom, just as we just mentioned with that last bit of feedback, it's difficult not to take the cash, because at the end of the day, it's business.
Sure.
So, I mean, you guys, are you making what you want to sell it, or are you taking custom orders?
I mean, it's hard. I feel like it's hard to start out that way. Because you could put stuff out in the world, but who the fuck are you, right? And why is anybody interested in buying your stuff? And maybe eventually, slowly, through word of mouth, you know, you can get there to where you can just always just make what you want and sell it. But I think some of it, you gotta sell your ass a little bit and take some custom orders, and then eventually get to where you have built up enough reputation or whatever. Or maybe you decide all of a sudden, maybe you think you want to just make what you want, but then you realize you actually really like custom orders. I don't know. Maybe you're missing out on the custom order game. But yeah. I think orders is a strong way to start for most folks.
There's another side to that, isn't there? So as much as I just said, it's everybody's goal to just make what they want to be able to sell it. You're probably not stretching yourself as much as you would if you had a custom order. And you're not probably learning as much because you're just doing what you already know.
Sure.
So there's advantages to both, you know. There's no hard and fast rule there, I don't think.
Yeah, 100%. Custom orders of custom orders of.
Thanks for the feedback, Jeff.
I'm listening, motherfuckers. I mean, what do you want from me? I'm just saying that I was going to say that custom orders have informed my decisions. Like I wouldn't have made some choices if it wasn't for some customers, and then I look back on them and think about them, and I appreciated them. So I'm for it, 100% for it. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, is this chicken and the egg? Like, what comes first? But I mean, if you don't make anything, and then you say, I'll make you whatever you want, people want to see you made something. So I mean, you got to make something so that people can see what you can do. And then they're always going to say, I love this, but can you do it in blue? Or I love this, can you put my name on it? And I love this, but can I put a carpoon clip on it? You know, it's like, you know.
Well, and that's where I think we've kind of touched on starting out with like a third party, like our friend Abe over at Eating Tools or the like, that can help, who acts kind of as a curator to help kind of get you a kickstart and to get people, because he has a curated page where people go to him for quality. And if you can get in with somebody like that, then, you know, you do work with them for a bit to start. Then you can eventually, you know, go out on your own, or you can just keep working with them or whatever. I mean, I think there's value both ways. But that's definitely a good way, I feel like, for folks to try to start too, if they can get in with a gallerist of sorts.
I agree. The problem is you know, these guys got to like just start shucking and jiving. You got to, you motherfuckers got to,
you know,
put the
shows,
put the carpet out and sit down and yell at people and do whatever it takes to get the ball rolling. So, yeah.
All right, I'll take this next one. Is from Nathan. He says, I'm a knife maker in DC and have noticed that I prefer the way that certain knives sharpen compared to... Oh, sorry. I got to start this over. I'm a knife sharpener in DC and have noticed that I prefer the way certain knives sharpen compared to others. Assuming that I do the same grip progression and number of passes, what causes some knives to easily... some knife steels to easily come off my finishing stone, a Cerax 3K, with an aggressive edge... that easily breaks the skin of a tomato versus an edge that feels too polished and is better suited for shaving. Is it knife steel, heat treatment, something else? All right, so it sounds like he's a sharpener and he's just noticing differences between the materials and isn't quite sure why. What do you guys think?
What do you think, Craig? Oh, he's muted.
he's chasing the kids right now.
He went to go do something. it's interesting because I've actually...
I was answering that question there for a good 15 seconds before I realized...
Oh, you're on mute. I'm sorry. Goon. Sorry. Go ahead, answer the question.
I was saying generally a carbon steel knife is going to be easier to sharpen. You know, the higher carbon content is going to be far easier to sharpen. That we've talked about this in the past. When you polish an edge too much... it gives a slightly different cutting feel to something that's got a bit more toothy, you know. So he's talking about the skin of a tomato, and quite often, it's like using a saw. When you start using a saw for the first time, getting that first sort of bite in is the difficult bit, and once you do, it'll saw easier. So quite often, I find particularly for something like a tomato that has a skin, if it is too polished, it can be quite difficult, unless it's like a complete and utter razor. But I think knife steel is probably going to be the biggest sort of differentiating factor there.
For sure.
Between those two.
I mean, I've been finding when I'm sharpening at the market, the stainless steel knives definitely take a little bit more time to sharpen. One, because of those, especially the large chromium carbides, but they just grind a little bit differently. I agree. It's with Craig. There's just different steels and they cut differently. With everything being the same, they will just cut differently. We notice the same thing when we're hand sanding, right? We could use the same sandpaper, same hand sanding stick and stuff like that, but you get two different types of steels side by side. I'm sure, Jeff, you see it when you do like whatever the 1080. Blades versus the 440C, the big difference in how they cut and hand sand and everything.
Monster. One thing I also notice is I've stopped using the buffer on the wire edge. When I finish grinding, I stopped using the buffer like almost 2 years ago. And what I noticed was I was using the buffer originally because I really wanted a very clean edge. But what I think was happening was the buffer was taking off too much of the wire edge. And at first I thought it was making it sharper. And then I started to use on a tomato and I started to think I'm taking some of that tiny, tiny micro tooth off. Like the buffer was, I thought I was doing something good and then it was not getting me the final edge that I wanted. So I've been actually using, one of my favorite things to finish is I have a Tormek and I use that leather strop. And that leather strop is... It's great as a strop. It moves around, and with a little compound, it doesn't take off too much, and it makes it much sharper. But I think sometimes 100%. I mean, 440C is a bitch. It is a total bitch, and we're to the point where we're going into figuring out I might be switching over to AEBL then at the end of the beginning of the year just because I might just, it might help me on labor and it might help me on, we're doing a lot of testing. I've made a few knives with it and I really like how they can come out, and Rockwell's been tight, and everything's been very consistent. And I used Knife Engineering, the recipe, and I really liked it. And it's just, and it sharpens different. It sharpens different. It's just the way it is. And I think when your hand sharpening something that's real hard is going to be a lot harder to do. That's it.
Yeah. When you said that you take to sharpen, you used to take it to a buffer. Were you just using a standard sort of cotton sort of mop?
I was using a cotton mop, and I was using a little bit of compound.
Right, okay.
And then I wasn't pushing it in real hard. I mean, I was just going light. Both of you, two of you. I mean,
you're the one that started with the giggle.
I mean, I had to, I didn't want you to think I didn't know. I mean, that's the part of it. I mean, if you don't think I stepped into, that's what she said. You know what I'm saying? I already, we needed some sort of word or some sort of code. We need some sort of word or code to make sure we didn't slip into it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's what she said. Okay.
I will say, to add on to what Jeff was saying, that our friend Dr. Laren Thomas on his website, thenifesteelnerds.com, he has an article called Testing the Edge Retention of 48 Knife Steels, which is very interesting. And there are some other articles that branch off from that that have some really good information regarding wear resistance and sharpening angles and all that kind of stuff that folks really should check into. Some good info.
Get the book. Everybody get the book.
Get the book. Definitely. Read the articles.
You know where you can get the book?
Tell us.
Maritime Knife Supply. They have...
Really?
Yeah, Lauren sent me a message saying you can get... If you
can, Canadians read?
Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, my God. There goes that sponsorship, ladies and gentlemen. Nice talking to you, Lawrence. Don't worry. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't make it up. But if you go to Maritime Knife Supply, not only can you get all your abrasives and you can get all your stuff that you need, knife making supplies, all that, you can get the Laren Thomas book, Knife Engineering. And if you're in the United States, he'll send it just like he would anywhere else. So go get yourself some of that Maritime Knife Supply, and if you get some, you get the abrasive belts, he gives you 10% off on the 10th one. So, Maritime Knife Supply. That was not me, PS, beforehand. That was Craig. You know, the funny thing is, I'll tell you something funny. I get so many messages, and a lot of it is the dynamics of this podcast, and it's the three different voices. Now, there's always this concern that because I'm from New York, I'm supposed to be the garbage, right? And then you get away with murder, Craig, because you have this posh English accent. I remember when you first started Knife Talk, everyone was scared shitless because it felt like the BBC with you.
It was very
BBC. It was very BBC. Yeah, it was very BBC. And
good evening. I am joined here today. You were
totally, and you fucking bamboozled everybody. Because you're just as much a garbage as everybody else, but you hide it. You hide it.
He hides it behind that British accent.
He hides it. I mean, he's sitting there, eating hamburgers and sucking on a beer, and laughing because you guys think he's a BBC. He's not. He's the same garbage as you are.
The same garbage as you. That's a show title for us. Okay. Okay, what else we got? Kite Bladen Tool. I was just listening to the newest episode, and Jeff mentioned using mold polishing stones for helping hand finishing. I was checking them out, and they seemed like they could be an awesome tool. My question is, what grits and shapes would you recommend starting with, Jeff?
Once again, Aaron Goff, he beat the brakes off me. He says, I don't know why you're not talking about mold polishing stones. And so... At first, I didn't know, and I thought people were, and then I thought you hold them like, when you get mold polishing stones, they're like 4 inches long, maybe like half an inch wide and like a quarter of an inch thick, and you can do them.
I know that shape
you
pretty
can
well.
Do, yeah. I'm sure
you're
you
just
do.
Getting the little ones.
I'm sure you. Well, that's what a lot of them are. A lot of them aren't. Okay, so let me finish. So people think that you hold them like a sanding stick, but it's not the case. You hold them like if you hit your finger. So it's you use the thin end and then just kind of work. I swear to God, the two of you, I don't know what happened. You guys, I'm trying to tell this story here. And they're great. And they're great because you do not waste as much material, and it gets you to being able to use the sandpaper quicker. We do definitely, especially with 440C, we're really like, we're starting off before we do the finish hand sanding with the mold polishing stones, and they've been really great. And in terms of the ones we use the most, we start off with 150 and go to 220 and go to 400 and 600. Then you back off and go back with the 220 Rhino Wit. You can just get packs or assortment packs at places that you would buy things in bulk or not in bulk. And they're not pretty inexpensive. It's definitely worth giving them a try. The hard part is figuring out getting comfortable holding them, because it's not like using a sanding stick.
Well, and they do make sanding stick holders.
Okay.
For those mold polishing stones.
There you go.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay. Cool.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Cool. But once you do go back to your sandpaper, there's only one sandpaper to use, and that is Rhino Wet, made by Endasa. We all use it. It's just the best. It saves you time and it saves you money. All the grits you could possibly think of, they are great. And if you go to TexasFireSupply.com, they've got them all there. So you fill up your basket, take a look at everything else that they have, because they've got everything you could possibly need as a knife maker. So go take a look. TexasFireSupply.com. Use Knife Talk 10 at checkout and you get 10% off. What a deal. What a steal. Okay. Who wants to take this one from Tree Hill Custom Knives?
I'll take it. Tree Hill Custom Knives asks, when doing full pattern welded steel or Damascus knives without a single core steel, is there a concern or issue with uneven wear at the edge because of the two different steels and their respective heat treats? Or is the difference so small that it doesn't really affect anything in a real-world use situation? What do you guys think?
Good question.
Why don't you answer the question? I don't know the answer. Why don't you answer the question, Marego? I mean, you weren't here last week. front-load you with some questions.
Last
week, Jeff purposely made sure we had the easy questions, so we've loaded these back up with the more difficult
questions. I wanted to make sure you came back with some good ones, you know? Go ahead.
helping me feel like I'm pulling my weight. So I actually think that the knives benefit greatly from the this just so what he's talking about.
I agree. I agree.
Well, me too. Me too.
So what this guy's talking about, you make Damascus from two different types of steel. Typically, a typical mixture would be a 1080 and 15 and 20. And even though they are very chemically similar composition-wise, when they are heat-treated, they are ultimately just slightly different. It is a very subtle difference. And that does affect the performance, but I feel like it actually benefits the performance in my experience. Of the knives over time in use and between sharpenings, especially, it helps create a more aggressive. So you start out, so say you make a Damascus knife, you finish it, it's got a great Damascus pattern, you sharpen it, it starts out very uniform, but over time in use, the materials wear slightly differently. But that I've in my experience, I feel like it actually benefits the knife and feels like it actually is holding that edge longer. So you can go longer between sharpenings with my own custom piece that I have at home. I actually really like it. But it also ultimately comes down to what you want that knife to be used for. And if it is just a general purpose, going to blast through vegetables and meats and all kinds of stuff and fruits, you know, it's probably not that big of a deal that the edge isn't one piece. But if you are, say, a sushi chef, or where your cut is going to be part of your presentation, you do want that single core material. And that's why a lot of, especially like Japanese knives, have a single or a mono steel core that's clad by the Damascus. So it still has the aesthetic and the look of the Damascus, but along the edge, it's one kind of steel. So then when it's making those very nice, very clean presentation cuts.
It's consistent.
Yeah, that consistency through the cut, so that when they present it to you in like a beautiful piece of sashimi, you're super elated and excited to eat it. Makes and mash it up with your nasty teeth.
Makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense, even the nasty teeth part.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, do we have any tricky dilemmas?
Yes, we do. If you follow us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast, not our individual Instagrams, we put together your questions, we put together your dilemmas, feedback, hot takes, whatever you want. So here's some tough dilemmas. This one comes from Wolf Heart Ironworks. Tough dilemma. I sold a knife to a guy, and after it was finished, side note, the customer asked if the handle could be shapelier and asked if I could add a mosaic pin. I said no to both, and he bought the knife anyway. He got it and said it was his favorite in his collection and had the most comfortable handle. Later, he messaged me and asked if I could tell anyone inquiring about the knife that I sold it for $500 when I really said I really sold it for $375. as he was trying to upsell / trade it on the secondary market. What would you say? Side note, I told him no again, and then honesty was my business model. Cheers, guys.
Exactly. Tell him to fuck right off. If he wants to give you the extra money, you'll say that's what you bought it for. But that's crazy.
A tricky move, man.
Yeah.
Ugh. I mean, it's not a tricky move. It's just a dick move.
No, but the goal to ask, even.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I've heard of the opposite. You know, could you send me an invoice cheaper so maybe my wife would see the, you know, the cheaper invoice, but not could you tell people it costs more than I'm actually paying you? Hmm. No.
I mean, this brings up the whole conversation about secondary markets, though, right? Because I think a portion of the population of people buying custom handmade knives is seeing them as some sort of investment that they can turn around and flip, basically, somewhere in the future. And I don't think I don't know why he would need to say that he paid more, unless it's only been a couple days or something like that since he bought it. But if he bought it even a year ago, you know, he could say, yeah, the price used to be this, but this guy's growing in popularity, blah, blah, blah. He could sell whatever kind of bullshit story he could say and sell them and be like, yeah, now it's $500 whatever the fuck he wants.
But the guy knows someone will say, I like that knife. How much was it? And the knife maker is going to say, he paid, you know, this is what it cost. Then he knows he's just trying to, he's trying to say he bought the knife from the guy. He knows he's going to sell it. He knows someone's going to ask him how much it was. And he wants the knife maker to say it was more than it actually was. Because he knows that they're not going to go to the guy who bought it. They're going to go to the guy who made it. And they go to the guy who made it. And the guy who made it say, he paid $350. And he said, well, how come that guy said it was $500? So it's like, it's tricky because he's trying to front load it. And some nonsense. There's people out there who do stupid
stuff. If somebody
came
to you and said, I'm looking to buy one of your knives on the secondary market, if you like, you know, from one of your customers, how much did they pay for it? Would you tell them anyway?
Ooh, that's
it's
a good question.
It's none of their
right
business,
there.
Is it?
That's
it's,
a good question.
That was a transaction between you and your customer.
Right. Yeah, but I don't think I would.
But they don't have to. You don't have to. But you wouldn't say. I mean, if I was looking at this, looks like scenario time. Looks like scenario time, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be the guy. You be Craig Lockwood.
Hello, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives.
I have a question. I'm in the market for a knife from...
You've definitely rung the right guy. Okay.
Well, here's the question I had for you. I'm looking for the knife. It had a blue handle. And okay. I think you had it on your Instagram. And I okay, know
this is a knife I've already made.
And I know that this Fleabag friend of mine bought it. And I was wondering, what did he pay for it? What do you think? What do you pay for? I need to know what he paid for, this fucking guy. And I'll tell you why afterwards.
Okay. Well, listen, I wouldn't want to tell you how much he paid for it, but I could make that knife for you now, a very similar knife, at my current prices. So if you're interested, that would be 500 euros. Well, are you interested?
Here's the problem. I need to know what he paid because he owes me money. And what he's planning on doing is he actually owes me $500. And he's saying he paid $500 for the knife, and he wants to give me the knife. I just want to make sure that it's worth $500.
All I can tell you is if I were to make that knife for you today, I would charge you $500.
Well,
for
see,
that knife.
I don't trust this motherfucker because I think he's been having it on with my sister. So I want to make sure.
What's your sister's name?
Don't worry about my sister's name. How dare you?
I think we've all had to go on your sister, to be honest with you.
Hey, you bastard. Yeah, so I mean.
I'll just put the phone back down. Right. That was, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that is the other side of the story. Would you tell anybody anyway? And I think that's the only way you can really answer that is I could make that for you now for this cost.
Now, I've had a guy once buy a knife from me, and somebody sent me a message saying it's on eBay right now. And I put it on I looked on it, and he put it up for more than he paid. And I said to myself, good luck. I mean, why? Yeah. You know.
Well, yeah, it's not yours
it's
anymore.
It's not mine. Good luck. It's up to good him. Luck.
Yeah.
Give him hell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think we've got a new title for this show. We've all had a go on your
No,
sister.
We're not doing that. We're not doing that, you flea bag, you. Jesus Christ. It's interesting because, you know, there are, you know, knife collectors, and they talk a big game, and then they don't know what the fuck they're talking about, and then they try to fleece people. So. Mm. I would think it happens, but I like the idea of the fact the guy said, no, I'm not doing that. And the other thing is like, I can't remember what I'm supposed to tell, you know, what I'm supposed to do for other people. Like, guy once got on my DM, says, hey, remember you were going to make that thing for me. What? You said you were on Instagram Live. You said you're going to make me something. What? I'm supposed to remember that? Oh, and you're supposed to tell me that it was, I can't remember that. Stop it.
Yeah. Okay. Any more?
Henry Hyde, good old Henry Hyde, says, here's a quarter-life crisis soul-searching dilemma. Akin to Jeff's question of the role of the modern-day blacksmith, what purpose do we serve as knife makers beyond supplying a tool to our customer, or are we just content creators at this point? Henry Hyde.
I feel like we're still knife makers. Yeah. I mean, hopefully we're still tool makers, because otherwise it's all sizzle and no steak, right? So let's make some fucking tools.
All sizzle, no steak. Whoa, baby. Yeah. That's a good one. Never heard that one before. That's a good one.
Quarter-life crisis. You've got to assume this guy's in his 20s. I think it's easy to get sucked into the community that's based around knife making. And the way you find that community is via the likes of Instagram and YouTube, where people are sharing content. I think for every knife maker that's on Instagram or YouTube, there's probably 70 or 80 who aren't making knives. So I think that's just a part of being everybody's still a knife maker, but that whole sort of marketing yourself via content is just a very small part of it. And yeah, and as much as, you know, we like to think here that we sort of know the community of knife makers because we interact with so many of them, it's just a tiny, tiny shaving of, you know, what's really below the surface. Of, you know, people who are just putting the work in and making knives every day.
But I think he's adding the broader question of what is the role of the modern day bladesmith or knife maker right now. And to me, it's still passing on information to future generations. Like getting people interested in it keeps the zest for what we're actually doing alive. Sure. Otherwise it dies. Hmm. Like, I mean, we're creating new content based on old content that whether you like it or not, it's kind of solidified in the psyche of our society and civilization. There you go.
Right, but I think, too, that as tool makers, like, it's important that what we can do versus what commercially manufacturers can do is that we can spend even an extra 20 minutes or upwards of a couple hours on a single piece that they can no way ever afford. And I think that also is what really helps our work stand apart. So hopefully people are at least making knives that, you know, perform at the same level as a commercially manufactured knife or better, because you can take that extra time, because of, you're not and they can't, then it, like I said, it's more sizzle than steak. And my guess, my follow-up question would be like, okay, so then at what point are you kind of a con man in a way almost? And that's only really, I guess, if you're doing it knowingly, you know, maybe making poor quality stuff, but you got a great story so you can flip it and sell it. But I don't know.
But in regards to being a con man, there are people in their houses who have IKEA knives, IKEA, sorry for guys up in Sweden. They have IKEA knives that are inexpensive.
Sure.
That we would refer to as garbage, but they're perfectly happy making their dinner for years and years and years and years and years. So is it still, I mean, where do we, I mean, riding on the idea of like this, you know, self-serving, self-righteous importance to something that might not be that important to other people.
I feel like it's an integrity. I guess for me, it would be a question of integrity for me personally. If I was making a knife, like my knives are fancy looking and shiny and glitzy and cool patterns, but if they can't perform for shit, like what's the fucking point of any of it? But
what we're saying is a lot of these cheaper knives can, you know, for doing. We often talk about, you know, heat treat, and we go into such depth about it. But you know, if we're cutting an onion, an IKEA knife will do the job. Will certainly do the job. So I think going back to that whole sort of storyteller, and are we just content creators? I think the point, as Mareko just said, that we'll spend the extra time and do something that a factory wouldn't, and the way to justify that to an end customer is by selling the story and creating that content. Because, you know, performing-wise, for the everyday tasks, we could buy a factory knife. So what we're trying to do with content then is explain the difference in the work that we'd put into it compared to a factory who are just stamping these out by the thousands a second.
I have a story that happened this week. My kid just finished working. She's getting ready to go back to school. She'd been working this summer at a bakery. And one of the things they had her do is they had her cutting onions for Bialy's. So she came home one day and she was just like, this, and then she's a snob now because it's like knives are sharp in the house. So she says, hey, they got me using this knife. And it is bad. I'm crying all night. I'm crying all day. This thing is like killing me because I got to cut the bag of onions and it's dull. I said, well, why don't you take one of my knives? She goes, I can't do that. I'm gonna be like teacher's pet or something. Last week she was there, I drove her in and I was talking to the owners and I said, give me that knife. I hear it's dull. And they were embarrassed because it's like a nothing special Restaurant Depot thing. And I said, don't worry about it. I gave it a lick on the belt grinder, hit it on the leather strop, brought it back to the shop. And it was probably a $16 knife, and they were like, wow, this works great. I'm like, okay, you're happy. Fine. Congratulations. You know, I agree with you about integrity, though. Integrity is important. You do what you say you're going to do, and you stand behind your product.
Yeah, and people put value on, and I think it's becoming more and more normal for people to put value on things that they see the work going into it now. We've all grown up, you know, from the 80s onwards, knowing about, you know, cheaper sort of Chinese, you know, mass-produced stuff. And we're all aware of that and the cheapness of that. And I think everybody's starting to see, and not now, but, you know, over years and years and years, people are starting to see the value of things made with care. And that's what we do. And as I said, we need to sort of shout about that and tell our stories and make content so people can see the difference between these two knives. This one has been made with care, and this one has been depressed out in the
factory. I think that we should be also seeing ourselves as a milestone in the history of knife making, or a stopping point of the present in regards to how knife making is progressing throughout civilization. You know, I think it's important. I think it's important to keep doing it, keep passing along the information. Next generation keeps doing it, see what happens. And I think that's the most important thing. And if it's just content, we're saying content now, but down the line, it's part of this information. Or look at how many people watch your videos, Mareko, or watch Aaron Goff's or Michael Trolsky's or all these guys. That's part of the carrying on of information that's important to civilization.
Yeah. No, completely agree. Completely agree. Whereas in the past, we would have, you know, excavated, you know, burial sites and found old knives and blades and things like that. And that's how we'd seen they were making. Sure. The new version of that is sticking up a YouTube video. You're right. You're right. Okay. Should we go back to questions? Okay. Leonardo Lee has asked, my housemate moved out a while back, and among the things that he left behind was a huge pile of 2mm, which is 5/64ths. Fucking hell, that's ridiculous. Stick welding rods. I don't really like them, but I refuse to get more of my regular 3.2mm, which is an eighth of an inch, ones, which I'll until I use them up. Have you guys ever put up with a rubbish tools consumables just because you had them and didn't want to get new ones? Ah, good point. Okay, consumables. You know, this isn't part of your end product. This is part of the making of the product. I certainly have. I've had loads of shit belts in the past, and I just like, let's just use them up. Once they're gone, they're gone. Yeah, it's, why not? As long as it's not a material that you're using in the product, and if you know that's substandard, I think, you know, why would you be doing that? Sure. But if it's a consumable, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
I have an eighth inch bronze rod that I use occasionally.
Ooh!
Well, it's a brazing rod. That's usually used for like plumbing and shit, like or some welding applications. But yeah, I've used that in part of my applications, for accents or for actual pins, because they work. It does the job, and it's got the look that I'm looking for.
Yeah,
of course. I've inherited stick rods that were like waterlogged, and I had to get some jobs done, and I had to put a lot of steel in some welds, and I used it. You know, I had a belt company send me some abrasive belts. They put the seam on the outside, and I was like, "Well, let's see what happens." And it was a sloppy situation, but you know, of course, you know, sometimes whatever's port in the storm.
I think I know what belt seals are.
Maybe. We won't talk about it here. Needless to say, the phone call happened. I was just like, why are you sending me these weird belts with the seam on the outside? What am I supposed to do? Slap me in the face every 5 seconds?
Okay, Custom Cast. Who's taking that?
I don't know where you are. You're running around. All right, Custom Cast says, hello, guys. My oven only goes to 1,000 degrees centigrade. I want to get into stainless, but all the data sheets say that I have to go up to 1,050 centigrade plus for quench. Are there any that can be heat treated under 1,000 degrees centigrade? What the fuck is centigrade?
it's 1832.
Let's do the math for you.
1832 Fahrenheit.
Anything under 1832?
I think no.
I mean, you're pretty much on it, aren't you? You're pretty much there. Not quite, but you're pretty much.
I'm not going to do a convert. You can't listen to a podcast where someone's doing conversion rates. It's just like, it sucks. Yeah, it sucks to listen to. I'm just like fucking thumbing through. Centigrade. How do you spell centigrade? I'm not doing that. Listen, you got to knock it off. You have to knock it off with the what can I do? You know, you got to do it or don't do it. I'm under the impression, I mean, 1,800 degrees isn't going to get you to 440C or AEBL. AEBL needs to be at like 1950, you know, 1925, 1950, and that's Fahrenheit, ladies and germs, or as Alec and Will used to call it, freedom height.
Freedom height.
That fucking, how good did that fucking bit go? How long did the freedom? You can get the, you know, the Freedom Height shirts are now in like some sort of third world country, like those, like the championship, like the championship. You know, have you ever seen this? Is the best is, you know, when two teams are on, in the Super Bowl, they have to prepare to have championship shirts ready when the game is over. So the winners have it and the losers have it. So they take all the loser ones and they ship them off because it never happened.
You see little kids playing barefoot football
wearing Freedom Height shirts. Wearing Freedom Height shirts. That's the best. That's the best, Alex. Nice. She's like, hey, Will, might as well send them down to wherever. Goodwill. That's what it is. Right. Just kidding.
Okay. Okay. Well, look. I need to be out of here in 10 minutes. Shall we call this a day? Let's do an after show, because they're often fun. Right then. Thank you all very much for listening. Before we go, I just need people to tell, well, Mareko to tell people about his grinder, because I know it's very good. And it's worth listening to.
I love my Broadback grinder. It's a great grinder. It's the, I call it, I like, I don't know if they like it, but I like calling it the Swiss Army knife of grinders, because it is such a versatile machine. It's like it's seven or eight machines in one, honestly, all the way from a disc grinder and a slack belt and a surface grinder and so many things in between. Go check out Broadback Iron. You should have had somebody else do this. I can't talk today. BroadbackIronworks.com. And we got a couple discounts. I can't remember them off the top of my head because I've been out of it, partying all last week. But what is it? It's Knife Talk 100. Saves you 100 on...
yeah, that'll save you 100 on the sharpening system and on the sewing machine that they do. Okay. But Knife Talk 200 will save you $200 on any of their grinder packages.
Sorry, I really needed
to
assist.
So it's a hell of a deal. It's a hell of a deal.
Yeah, so go check them out, BroadbackIronworks.com. I'm also excited to be part of their booth at Maker Camp. I'm going to be in there doing a bunch of demonstrating and basically making a knife, doing my best to make a knife from start to finish at Maker Camp. So come check that out if you haven't already got your tickets.
Yeah, and remember, you can also buy them painted and even assembled now. There's a tiny bit of assembly to do once they arrive to you, but they're basically ready to go and painted. So, yeah. BroadbackIronworks.com. Okay, thank you all very much for listening. It's been a fun show. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
This show is brought...
Okay. Well, fucking mosquitoes. Sorry about that. I'm being bitten alive here. Eaten alive. Mosquitoes.
Believe
everywhere.
It or not, I have an after show question. if you want, or we can just free ball it like we normally do. It's up to you.
Okay, let's do a show. A
this
question, yeah.
After show question comes from Thirsty Work Industries. Do you guys have any recommendations for a good culinary/cooking TV series or a podcast that is educational? I enjoy cooking, but I only cook 2 or 3 meals a week. It's relatively simple meals, and I like to up my game for family as well as understand how my knife designs have an impact. Thanks.
I mean, Chef Table is pretty great. That's a hard one to beat on Netflix, right?
But it's hard. Have you guys seen that? It's hard to watch these guys. It's hard to
See something with more like recipes and stuff.
Well,
like
something
that
to get, you know, they're beautiful
Rachel
to watch.
Ray.
But it's hard to you know, get creative and want to make something in the kitchen when you're watching, you know, guys blowing bubbles and smoke and foam and all that stuff.
I mean, Iron Chef's pretty fun too. I don't know. Techniques for me, it's all about getting solid techniques down. And then after that, it's combining different flavors. And some of the most creative stuff is happening on some of those competition shows, honestly, like Iron Chef and the like.
Yeah. And I mean, TV wise, I don't know what's like in the UK. I'd imagine it's the same. But in the UK, every evening on all the major channels, there's some sort of cookery show on. It's just huge TV at the moment, you know, cookery. It's just everywhere. So, and it's obviously, you know, cookery channels and all the rest of it as well. But it seems to be every time I turn on the TV, there's somebody cooking. So there's plenty there. My wife, we signed up to Masterclass, you know, that thing this week. And there's the Gordon Ramsay one, and it's got that famous clip of him trying to sharpen knives, you know.
So
my wife's like, I want to watch this. Actually, there's lots of cookery things on MasterChef, on Masterclass, sorry. And she's like, I'm going to watch that Gordon Ramsay one. And I'm just like, oh, fuck's sake. But
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of content out there. I mean, what I hate at the moment is all the fucking Instagram reels, you know, of all
you're not learning
Yeah, you're not learning anything from it.
Yeah, but you get good
it.
Recipes
just fast. Porn.
Like, there are good, there are some, I mean, the cornstarch business has got to be out through the roof. That's got to invest in, everyone's using cornstarch, but I think that those things are really, I mean, my family and I, we all send each other videos of, you know, those Instagram things to, for, like, recipe ideas.
Sure.
I suppose.
Yeah, in the States, also Cooks Illustrated is a really great magazine. What is it? They do have, what, America's Test Kitchen.
America's Test Kitchen.
There's also Milk Street in the United States, made by Christopher Kimball, who originally started or used to work for America's Test Kitchen. He's got his own thing going. I still think The Naked Chef with Jamie Oliver, there were a ton of really great recipes and techniques on that show that were very, very, very accessible. And he was never naked, thanks to you.
Yeah,
except for the intro.
Yeah, simple stuff. Simple stuff that anybody can do. That's the kind of stuff that I like. Yeah.
Have you noticed that Jamie Oliver?
Okay, I mean,
You got a second? Have a second? Oh, you slapping on a fucking mosquito?
You know how excited I get when you talk about Jamie Oliver.
I was just gonna say that every time he does a video. That fucking same song goes, "Live to Love, Love to Reality." You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, that was the theme tune for one of his shows.
Like, you can't pick another song, dude.
Yeah, he's obviously just taking stuff from that one show at the moment.
I mean, he's right. Recco's right. Those are good ones.
Yeah. No, they are great. Yeah. I mean, not food related, but whilst we're talking about podcasts, I've been heavily into Criminal at the moment. It's one of the Vox Media ones. And they're like half hours story, you know, it's like a documentary almost, of a crime that's been committed. And it's just half an hour and they talk you, and they're all crazy ones. They talk you through the story. The one thing that I fucking hate is the Shopify adverts every like 7 minutes. But they're, honestly, they're really great. If you just want mindless stuff while you're working away, Criminal as a podcast is really good.
And shout out to B. Cone Knives. He's started doing an interview series on the Workford podcast. So shout out to those guys. They're doing a secondary podcast where he's just doing it just one-on-one. So B. Cone, Brian Cone's doing a nice job, and the guys from Workford podcast. So
yeah, they take things seriously. That it's good. It's good.
Yeah, they take it seriously. Hey, listen. There's a lot of podcasts out there that are doing it, and then they're not doing it, and they're in, and they're out, and they're doing it.
Yeah. I've got to say, our audio the last few weeks has been incredible. Yeah. To listen back in the car, you just think, fuck me, that sounds great. You know, compared to some of the professional ones that I listen to, it's just like, Jesus, we're doing well, I think.
I might as well say it. We're out with Squadcast. Squadcast's over, ladies and gentlemen, so... We got a new system going on that's way easier. So,
yeah,
way easier. I have a funny story if you got a minute. All right,
okay.
So I was taking my kid to college, and other colleges, and we went to one college that I knew because I used to go there all the time when I was a kid. And then we had a good time there. And then we went to the second college that I'd been to once before. And my kid said, "Oh, have you ever been to this one before?" And I was thinking to myself, "Had I ever been to this college before?" And it drummed up a memory. So my high school played a basketball game, and it was a championship game, and the coach, his name was Mitch Sadowski, and everyone called him Suds, and he was like kind of like a small version of like Andrew Dice Clay, and he would come up to the street, "Hey Faye, let me talk to you, Faye. Hey Faye, I need a question for you." He goes, "Hey Faye, I got a question for you, Faye.
Hey, throw the fucking ball, will ya?"
It wasn't, I mean, kind of like that, but, I mean, it was, that was more Oliver Twist, but then Suds is a little bit more like, "Hey, Faye, hey, street rat, get over here, street rat." Call everybody street rat. He said, "Faye, I need you to, you're a tall guy, I need you for the game, I need you to wear the mascot uniform. Will you wear it?" And I'm just a senior in college, senior high school, I'm just like, "Yeah, Suds, whatever you want." I love Suds. Suds was awesome. He's like, "Faye, I need you to be the Panther, okay? You can be the Panther." And like, "You got it, Suds." He's like, "Go downstairs and meet us for the bus and get the costume." So our mascot was a Panther. And I was psyched because I love the guys on the basketball team, my friends. We go to this college, I've never been there before. I get on the costume and I start running around and cheering. You know, you got a mask and your helmet and whatever it is. No one knows who you are, and yeah. you can fuck around. And then halftime, I realize, or half, you know, whatever it was, one of the periods or whatever it was. I noticed that the tail, when you stick it between your legs and you play with yourself, it's really funny. And I showed one of my friends. He's just like, "That's really funny." So then I don't know what came over me. Everyone gets back on the court, and I start running around, and I stick the tail between my legs, and I start to jerk off in front of everybody wearing a Panther costume. And Suds goes, "Hey, Faye, get over here." And he goes, "You're fired." And he fired me. And he turns to another tall kid. He goes, "Hey, Stick." You know, like, "Hey, Stick, get over here. You put the costume on. Faye is fired.
And don't leave him alone. Hey, Knuckles, get over here."
He goes, "Hey, Faye, you're fired. Hey, Stick, get over here, Stick." He's over. "You're going to do that, but don't you do that again. Don't you put—" He was funny. "But don't do it. Don't start jerking off the tail. You know what I'm saying?" And then that was my end of my career. And then I realized, then I snapped back to the present. And when my daughter says, "Have you ever been to this college?" I said, "No, I've never been here before in my life."
He's still banned.
Never been here before in my life. But it is a true story. And Suds said to me, "Hey, Faye, that was funny, but you can't do that with all the parents here. You know what I'm saying?" I was like, "I got you, Suds. Sorry, man. I overstepped my bounds as a mascot."
The old tail between the legs.
There you go. Happened.
Yeah. Nice. Mareko, what have you been watching? Anything interesting recently?
I've been watching this kind of like, I don't know, like a magical series on Netflix called Lock and Key. And it's about this haunted house kind of.
With the E on the lock. Is it? Yeah. Yes, I've seen it coming up.
It's interesting. It's been a good watch.
Nice. Jeff,
anything? I mean, no. I've been listening to the Yankees, and now the Yankees are back. They're on a 4-game winning streak, and it's exciting. And then the big hitters who are on the DL are now back, and they're over. The problem is they're on the West Coast the next 2 weeks, so the games don't start till 10, which I'm not staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning to watch the game, listen to the game. But yeah, the Yankees have been back, and it's been awesome. That Yankee game was so much fun. Oh, number two, last story is. We were at the stadium. It was Yankee fans and Mets fans. I'd never been to the Yankee Stadium. It was packed. So Yankees and Mets are both New York teams. I was sitting there with my kid. I was like, "This is a great." The energy was great. There was people saying, "Let's go Yankees. Let's go Mets." And then this dad and his son were sitting down, and this group of Mets fans were standing up in front of them. And the dad was a Yankee fan. He says, "Hey, you mind sitting down? My kid and I can't see." And then he wasn't getting guys' attention, and he kept saying, "Come on, sit down so we can see. Sit down, we can see." And then all of a sudden, the Mets fans looks over at him, and he goes, "Suck my dick." and my daughter was just like, "Oh my god, there's going to be a fight!" And I said, I put my hand on her shoulder, and I said, "This is the fucking best part about being New Yorker. It's the fucking you welcome to being New York. That was the greatest New York moment of all time. Hey, my kid and I can't see. Suck my dick." It was fucking awesome. It was fucking great. It was such a New York moment. I was like so proud. I said to her, like, "Aren't you proud? This is the glory of being a New Yorker." She goes, "That was kind of terrifying." I'm like, "Nah, that was all right. Don't worry about it. It's fine."
Are they generally friendly?
There was no problems. They were razzing each other, and there were some people on the train back home like razzing each other, but there were no problems. I mean, it was like the Mets took 2 games, and then the Yankees took 2 games. I mean, it isn't like what happens with you people, you know, like hitting each other with tire irons when you're getting a beer. But there were no problems, but it was funny. I mean, it was funny people just breaking each other's balls. That was kind of fun.
Yeah. Nice. Well, okay, I need to go. I'm 2 minutes run over. But that was fun. Thank you all for listening again. We'll be back next week, and I think we've got 2 weeks until our 250th show. So we need to think of something. What we're going
to
do.
We're going to do something, surely. We're going to just do it.
We probably won't, but we should do something. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We shall see you bright and early again next Monday morning. Don't be late. Bye for now.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.